Welcome, little children, to today's study for March 23rd, 2024 of the Common Era, the time being 1836 hours Eastern Daylight Time. We're agreeing with you again today with our study for today being that of the Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 9, Paragraph 4, and more besides, including 2 Chronicles 14, and Jonah chapter 4, with some excerpts from the article Trojan War and History of Babylon, as well as the Ethiopian King's List, and Manetho in his Dynasties of Egypt. Now, if we look in the Dynasty of Egypt, according to Manetho, Dynasty 22, we see that Osorkon, who succeeded the king known as Shishak, or Shishonk, or Shoshank, or Tsisonkosis, whose reign is, according to Manetho, 21 years. We see Osorkon 15 years, both according to Eusebius and also according to Julius Africanus. And we've explained in the Trojan War article the reason why the 21 years is there for Shoshank, as we call him in the modern day, but Shishak of the Bible. The 21 years is there, as explained by the article Trojan War, both because Manetho says it's 21 years in both Africanus and Eusebius, but this is, by the way, that's in chapter 3, paragraph 9 of the Trojan War article. But more than that, we're going to see if we can go down and see what else we have here. Chapter 9, paragraph 4. And chapter 9, paragraph 9, we see the reason for the 21 years of Shoshank the First, because Dynasty 21, which preceded the dynasty in which Shoshank is named, which is Dynasty 22, there were 130 years, according to Eusebius, for that previous Dynasty 21, ending with the 35 years of Susen, who is Susen the Second on that list. And that is important because we have the beginning of Susen's reign in 1015, according to the article Trojan War, which explains all of the details in the article Trojan War. But then from 1015, 35 years takes us to 980, which suggests that Shoshank's year one is 980, even though he may have been co-ruling from 993, which is the date that we've determined is his year one in the chronology which we present, and which we call the genealogy. But that explains as much as I can say about that right now. But from our Crucible article today, King David lived 22 generations after Jacob, born 2044 BCE, or even 2045 BCE, possibly. Jacob was born, along with his twin brother Esau, and he was born to Isaac and Rebekah. And with David born in 1088 BCE, which we've already determined, we arrive at an average generation of 2044 minus 1088 in brackets divided by 22, which is a difference of 956 years divided by 22. And that gives 43.45 years per generation on average, reflecting how long earlier patriarchs lived, meaning that nowadays we think the average generation is something like 30 or 33 years or something, 35 years depending, but not concerned with whether it's firstborn or anything like that. The average generation for all the children being born is something like 30 to 35 years nowadays, and ever since the time of Moses. But back then, we just calculated 43. And these patriarchs that lived earlier, they lived longer, and they also fathered children much later in their lives. That's why the average is 43. If the average in King David's day was 33 years, it was 53 years or so in Jacob's day for the overall average of 43, average between 53 and 33. In other words, the average is the middle. Some generations might be missing from this sequence of 22 names, but the sequence from Ephraim given earlier seems to indicate that a few generations at most may be missing. Only a few at most may be missing, according to what we saw earlier about Joshua's descent from Ephraim. It indicates, too, that by the time of Moses, a lifespan was essentially what we see today. And a generation, likewise. So people lived about the same lifespan in terms of when they died, and also they had children about the same age in terms of when how old the father was when he had his children. Now, female generations are shorter because women tend to be younger when they are in childbirth. The Psalm of Moses, Psalm 90, confirms this about the generation in the time of Moses, as it says in Moses' psalm of a human lifespan, the days of our years are 70 years. That's from Psalm 90. That King David reigned in 1058 BCE is further provable by the biblical record at Judges 11:26, where Jephthah makes a statement to the Ammonites who oppressed Israel that it had been 300 years since Israel had arrived at the Jordan. Their arrival, our crucible gives us, 1452 BCE, that is, Israel, after 41 years, or 40 years and some months, rather, wandering in the wilderness, meaning they came out of Egypt having escaped from the Pharaoh's wrath, crossed the Red Sea, that was in 1493 BCE. And so 1452 is when they arrived after their wilderness wandering to the Promised Land, meaning that Jephthah's statement 300 years after that, in other words, was about 1152 BCE, 94 years prior to the reign of King David, which was 1058, we said, 1058, which 94 years are accounted for in the crucible as 40 years for King Saul, the king reigning before King David, 12 years for Samuel, judge of Israel. We could even make Samuel's judgeship 14 instead of 12. That would bring King Saul's year 1 to 1098 year 1, 40 years before David. We could do that too. But we've been saying, actually we said that at first. That was our first version of the genealogy before we revised it to make King Saul as year 1, 1100 BCE in the most recent version. And 40 years for the Philistine oppression of Israel, which ended by the days of Samuel the judge, from 1 Samuel 7 and 13. So there's 40 plus 40 plus 12 is 92 years. That it was 40 years for the Philistine oppression, right, is from Judges 13 and 1, beginning in the days of Jephthah, as implied by Judges 10:7 and 11:5, because the time when the Ammonites began to oppress was the same time as when the Philistines began to oppress, according to Judges 10:7. Let's take a look at that for a moment here. Here it is. Hand of the Philistines, he sold the Israelites into the hand of the Philistines and into the hand of the sons of Ammon. And Judges 13 and 1, the selling of the Israelites into the hand of the Philistines was for 40 years right there. So That's how we arrived at 1152 minus 40 years to get the judgeship of Samuel beginning in 1152 minus 40, which is 1112. And then if he ruled for 14 years, then Saul began in 1098. But if Samuel was judging for 12 years, then it was 1100 when Saul began to rule. So, 2 Chronicles 14 is what we're going to read today. But the rest of the difference between the 92 years and the 94 years also can be accounted for as fractions of years which are lost in the approximation of saying 12 or 40 years. It could be a fraction of a year not accounted for, which can account for this difference. The rest being therefore accountable in that way. So even the 300 years of Jephthah lead to 1058 BCE. That is for King David, his first year of rule. There scarcely remains one iota of doubt about King David, is the conclusion of this paragraph 4 of chapter 9 of the Crucible article. C cubed, Crucible of Credible Creed, that's our study for today in that article. Now, before we begin our reading in the Bible, I'd like to just do our proverb for today, little children, if you're ready. It's Proverbs 14, verse 11. The house of the wicked shall be overthrown. The tent of the upright will sprout and be known. So there's a contrast there in both the house of the wicked and also the tent of the upright. The house of the wicked shall be overthrown. The tent of the upright will sprout and be known. So even if the upright is not living in a house, but is forced to live in a tent, his dwelling place will sprout and be known and be more enduring than the house of the wicked one. That's what that says. So it's a wonderful contrast between the wicked and the righteous as written there in God's Word. By the way, this version that we use of the Bible, it stems from the Hebrew Bible, which was the Tanakh version, later translated or transcribed and copied by the Masoretes, famously, in the later times. And most of our documents of the Bible, most of our copies of the Bible, are from the Masoretes because they were the only documents that were late enough, you know, in history, to have survived until today. Mostly the ancient ones, more ancient than that, have perished. But the Tanakh was much older, of course, than the Masoretic text. And it included 24 books, 12, or I should say one of which, makes up 12 of the books that we have today in the Minor Prophets. So that adds 11 to 24 because, you know, we break it into 12 separate books instead of just one. So that's 24 plus 11 is 35 books. And then we also break Samuel into 1st and 2nd Samuel. So that makes 36. And we break Kings into 2, makes 37. And we break Chronicles into 2, that makes 38. And we break Ezra and Nehemiah into 2 books, Ezra and Nehemiah, which makes 39 books in our equivalent of the Tanakh Hebrew Bible, which we, in the English-speaking world, have translated into English, of course. But it's basically very similar in all the languages of the Western world. It has the same form that we see in the English form also. So I wanted to explain that also while we're on the subject of that Hebrew Bible, and which I mentioned the other day but didn't have the information that I needed to explain it. Our reading for today from 2 Chronicles chapter 14. Finally, Abijah lay down with his forefathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa his son began to reign in place of him. In his days, the land had no disturbance for 10 years. Now, this is important, okay, because we know, therefore, this war that came about later in this chapter with Zerah, the Ethiopian, must have occurred after the first 10 years of Asa's reign. But also, I want to show you chapter 15 first, before we go too far, so we understand. In 2 Chronicles 15 and 11, they sacrificed, they were, first of all, in verse 10, they were collected together on the third month of the 15th year of Asa's reign. And then they sacrificed to Jehovah on that day from the spoil that they had brought. So that was the spoil they brought from this battle with Zerah the Ethiopian, which had occurred in the previous chapter. They brought a lot of spoil from that battle. And we will see that. Okay, so this battle occurred maybe in year 14 or maybe in year 15, sometime very close to this gathering together to sacrifice from the spoil. That's important to understand, because when we look at this, I want to cover this first so that we don't have any doubt about it, so that we're not scrambling around trying to understand this. Asa, whose first year was, his year one of reign was, or rulership, was 957 in our chronology here. But it could be even 958. I think there'd be no problem with it being 958, because Abijam, even though Abijam ruled for 3 years, it says here that he began to rule in the 18th year of Jeroboam, and Asa began to rule in the 20th year of Jeroboam. So there should only be a two-year difference. So Asa can easily be 958. And this is all from the Bible, what I'm saying here. Although the dates we give are, of course, calibrated from within all the other secular information that give us these absolute dates. But 958 could be the year one of Asa. So then his year 14 could be 13 years later, or 14 years later. 14 years later would be, or his year 15 could be 14 years later also. So let's say 14 years after 958 would be 944. That's remarkable, because here the 15 years of Osorkon is Zerah the Ethiopian. That's the thing that we have seen in the articles that we've, on the lists of the, for example, the Ethiopian kings list. It shows here Zerah the second having a 38-year reign that corresponds to Osorkon the second. And we see a king called Tawassia the second who succeeded him, who is Takelot the second, succeeding Osorkon the second was Takelot the second. If we go back to Takelot the first, he's called Tawassia Dews on the Ethiopian king's list, and he reigned for 13 years, which is absolutely the same as what Manetho says about how long Takelot the first reigned. Now to find that, we'd have to go down to find him. Where is he? There he is. He's right after Osorkon. Well, that's a different... Who is that? Wait a minute. Is that Takelot the first? 13 years? Yes, because that's Osorkon the first. Right. Okay. Yeah, that's right. I prepared this as well as I could, but there's so many intricacies to this. To the Ethiopian king's list, it's a very intricate thing. I'm trying to find it again. Here it is. So, yes, preceding, okay. We don't even have... Osorkon the first doesn't even occur, does he, on this list? Oh, yes, he does. He's here. There's Osorkon the first in this list. You see, it's called the Dynasty of Menelik the first. He occurs on this list. Zerah the first is Zerah the Ethiopian. And his reign length of 26 years is different by 11 years here from the 15 years. And there's a 7-year difference between the Ethiopian list and our list. So we would have to add... we'd have to subtract, in fact, 7 years from these dates. So to get back up again, we have to add that 7 years back, and we have to add back the 11 years here, which is then 18 years, to get back to where this 15 years of Sira the First ended. And that's 18 years, right? But the thing is, yeah, and I also said we have to add, there's another period of time that we have to add to that. There's a way of looking at all of this, because the difference between Osorkon the Second and our date for him is the difference between 872 here, but it would be 7 years later, of course. So it would be actually, so, but let's just work out what it is. It's 34 years different being later. So it's 41 when we add the 7 more, or 8 more would be 42 years. So we'd have to have a 42-year discrepancy somewhere here, accounted. And we do, because if we take the 11 years here, for Sira the First, there's 11 years discrepancy. That accounts for 11 of the 42. And then we have 31 years here, which accounts for 31 more. So that's a total of 42. Because Amenhotep Zagdur was a king who reigned, Zagdur meaning sector, he was a king who reigned in a different sector. He reigned from Persia. Initially, before he came to Egypt, he reigned from Persia. Or before he fought in the Trojan War, or he had some dealings with the Trojan War. So, he didn't come to Egypt necessarily, but I think he did very probably have dominion in Egypt. We talk about all of this to some degree or other in our articles, but this 31 years could be completely misplaced here and not sequential, and therefore we can account for the 42-year discrepancy in the dates here, which is an astounding reality that we can discover. Now, also, in, yeah, here it is, here in the Babylon article, we identify these kings. We explain how we know that Tawashi II is the same as Takelot II. We explain the identification of how it came about. And so we know that Sira the First is Osorkon the First. He's Sira I. That's Osorkon. And that's why it's so crucial that, because we have also the reality here that 980 is the end of Dynasty 21. Therefore, the 21 years of Shishak, which begins in 980 in Dynasty 22, ends in 959 with his death, and that's year one of Osorkon, or Sira. 959, then, is the time which begins the 15 years of his reign. It ends in 944, and that's precisely the time, which is also the year 15 or 14 of Asa, when he fought the war against Sira. And in that battle, in this chapter, we see Sira the Ethiopian, verse 9, went out against them with 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots. And Asa went out against him, verse 10. But when we read further, we see that after a prayer on the part of Asa to Jehovah, or Yahweh, in verse 12, Jehovah defeated the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and they took to flight. And we were just reading the Ethiopians' king list, and they continued to fall until there was no one alive of them. That shows that Sira, or Osorkon, ruled for 15 years, and then he died in this battle. So our chronology completely accounts perfectly for it, even though there's a lot of confusion in the ancient lists, like the Ethiopian kings list. We don't have any confusion in our chronology, thankfully, by some great blessing of Jehovah. And our chronology can even explain the Ethiopian kings list. Menelik, on the Ethiopian kings list, remarkably, is apparently, and claimed to be, the son of Solomon by the Queen of Sheba. So 975. But that would mean, of course, in our dating, that's 7 years later, 968. But that still allows time for him to have been born, after Solomon finished the building of the temple and his own house in 994 BCE in our chronology, and then Menelik would have 26 years to grow up before he became king in 968 in our date, or 975 on the Ethiopian date, BCE. So 968 BCE, Menelik, 26 years old, king of Ethiopia, as the son of Solomon. That's another thing that actually fits in the genealogy, which the genealogy, some people would say, probably, in pronouncing it, but the genealogy is how I pronounce it, I guess. But in the BG, the Blessed Genealogy, it accounts, we can account for everything, including Menelik and the King Sira, the Ethiopian king, and all of that. But of course, you know, if we have to add back, if he died in 944, right, that's the difference of 20 years, that changes. See, he didn't rule necessarily in the same place that Menelik did. So this list is not right, because that's actually an Egyptian king. He came from Ethiopia, Osorkon. But you see, we don't have to worry too much about this list, because we already saw there's enough discrepancy that Amenhotep Zagdur is a king who can be completely taken out of this list also, removed from it. But it's still a very valuable list in terms of all the information it's giving us here, that we can try to work on it and figure out what's really happening, and the fact that Menelik actually agrees so closely with where he should be placed as the son of Solomon is just so astonishingly brilliant. Now, we have a little bit of time. We've got to read Jonah, though. So we don't want to waste too much time talking about anything else before that. To Jonah, though, it was highly displeasing. That is, that Jehovah forgave the city of Nineveh. He wasn't going to bring it to ruin. He had changed his mind about destroying Nineveh, and he got to be hot with anger. Jonah did. So he prayed to Jehovah and said, "Ah, now, O Jehovah, Yahweh, was not this an affair of mine, an idea of mine, while I happened to be on my own ground? That is why I went ahead and ran away to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a God, gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, and feeling regret over the calamity. And now, O Jehovah, take away, please, my soul from me, for my dying is better than my being alive." In turn, Jehovah said, "Have you rightly become hot with anger?" Then Jonah went out of the city and sat down east of the city, and gradually he made for himself there a booth, that he might sit under it in the shade until he would see what would become of the city. Accordingly, Yahweh God appointed a bottle gourd plant that it should come up over Jonah in order to become a shade over his head, to deliver him from his calamitous state. And Jonah began to rejoice greatly over the bottle gourd plant. But the true God appointed a worm at the ascending of the dawn on the next day, that it should strike the bottle gourd plant, and it gradually dried up. And it came about that as soon as the sun shone forth, God also went on to appoint a parching east wind, and the sun kept striking upon the head of Jonah, so that he was swooning away, and he kept asking that his soul might die. And he repeatedly said, "My dying off is better than my being alive." So evidently it was very hot. And God proceeded to say to Jonah, "Have you rightly become hot with anger over the bottle gourd plant?" Because this, of course, the worm that Yahweh had appointed to strike the bottle gourd plant. At that he said, "I have rightly become hot with anger to the point of death." But Yahweh said, "You, for your part, felt sorry for the bottle gourd plant, which you did not toil upon or make get big, which proved to be a mere growth of a night, and perished as a mere growth of a night. It came and went so fast. And for my part, ought I not to feel sorry for Nineveh, the great city, in which there exist more than 120,000 men who do not at all know the difference between their right hand and their left, besides many domestic animals. Not that the domestic animals knew the difference between right and wrong, but the men of Nineveh did, from Jehovah's viewpoint, deserve mercy. So that's why he forgave them. They had repented. And that's the story of the book of Jonah. And we see that the reason why Jonah ran away too in the beginning and tried to go to Tarshish, and that's why he was swallowed by the whale. It wasn't a whale, actually, it was a fish. And that's talked about. It's called a whale by many different versions of the story, but it was a fish, a large fish, according to the account in the Bible, which is possible. There are fish large enough that can swallow a human being, such as a whale shark, for example, according to the Insight book and other, if I'm recalling, or according to some publications of the Watchtower Society that I've seen. But the idea is that the fish is large enough to swallow a human being, so it's not a whale. Even though many stories have described the fish as a whale. And even I use the word whale because in my youth growing up, I was taught that it was a whale. So I still have that notion that it's a whale. But it was a fish. Now, maybe the fish could have been used as a generic statement, meaning the term could include the idea of a whale. But a whale is a mammal, and fish are not mammals, so it doesn't really describe it correctly to say it's a fish. And so it would be only symbolically a fish, or some other type of figurative meaning it would be a whale in a figurative way. If a whale means a large sea creature, then maybe it could be called a whale, right? But it should be a fish. But he was swallowed by a fish, and that was because he tried to run away to Tarshish, because he said in verse 2 there, that was his concern or his idea, his affair, that he knew Jehovah was gracious and merciful, and he didn't think that it would be right for him to go and pronounce judgment upon Nineveh. That's all for our study for today. It's March 23rd, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 19:09 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. Is there more to say? What do I normally? I know I say I love you because I do. I love you very much. Just a minute, my nose is itchy. I'm Ward Green. 19:10 hours now, Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.